Today on Compassion Radio.
Part of the whole thing with the witch doctors, they start attacking the family.
Yeah.
You know, when Gopilio started wanting to interact with Mark and I, the demons were killing off his livestock as fast as they could. They were killing all kinds of things off, just trying to distract him from us. About 2 weeks later, we always showed the Jesus film up in front of our house on this hill. And his wife said to me that day when I was with her, Gopilio ran up to your house to watch Jesus film, and it was stopped 10 minutes after he got there. And I said, Demokash, does he want to see Jesus film again? She said, yes.
This is Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. On this program, Bram spends time with people who live their lives in a missional way, whether it's in a mud hut in remote Africa, a church in war-torn Ukraine, a village in Nepal devastated by an earthquake, or one of the countless Christ-centered ministries in the United States. Bram is there, tirelessly bringing you the life-changing stories of God's love, goodness, and faithfulness. You know, most of us think we know ourselves pretty well. Who we are as people, what we do for a living, our plans for the future, and so on. And that's the story of Mark and Sidney Londaire. That is, until God called them to go across the world to become missionaries in Ethiopia. I'm Frank Montenegro. Please stay with us as they share their thrilling stories of the power of God to break through, even in the darkest of situations. Here's part two of that conversation.
Let me recap this again for the listeners. You all went being called by God and by the request of missionaries at the Soto Hospital there, the mission hospital, which is very active in treating things that nobody else would be willing to consider giving free health care to. Thousands of people come to you every year for that. And your job was to try to make the infrastructure work. Some of it worked well, some of it did not work well. But God was using that to open the door for some other things that then Sidney stumbled into, almost literally. And God is full of those kind of surprises. He gets you there in order to really open the doors for what he really wanted for you.
Exactly.
And so where did you go, Sidney?
Well, when we went back, we moved out into the bush with the people.
Mm.
And most Americans, or the white people, lived in compounds with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to have more access with the people.
No more enclaves for you.
Yeah. So we lived out with them. We found this old little foundation and a tin roof on top. And we built a house with it. And it had a thorn hedge around the compound there. And all our neighbors were in mud huts. For me, it was just start reaching out to the neighbors and try to see where we could give to them and bless them. The guy that helped build the house, he said, Mama, if you can take care of their medical needs, that is where you're going to find their hearts start opening up to what you have to say. So we started doing that with all the neighbors and finding out who was sick and what they needed. And
you became medical missionaries yourself.
Oh my goodness. I had never cleaned so many gory cuts in my life.
We're not medical, but anybody can clean a wound and see certain things. And then if it became too big for us, we'd send them to the hospital.
Mark would wash this man that had leprosy on his feet, bandage him up and put new shoes on his feet. And, you know, you just had all kinds of people at your gate every day for different needs. Some of them were just dying and just wanted to be near, thinking that if they were near you, they would be somehow okay. There was this local bar that was close to our house as we were strategically going to each mud hut and getting to know the different people. The mud bar was there.
And the mud bar.
It was the mud bar.
And sounds tasty.
The madam of the house, I just named her Liquor Mama because she was she was the head prostitute and the head bar owner.
Oh, wow.
Liquor Mama, every time I would go by her mud hut, she would dance and she would do this little thing with me. Well, early missionaries, when they came into this area, they had told the natives it's not proper to dance.
Huh.
And so Christians don't dance in that particular culture there. But here's Liquor Mama dancing. And I kept thinking, man, what should I do to relate to her? Because I couldn't speak to her at the time. I kept praying about it. And the Lord said, just dance with her.
Mm.
So whatever she did, I did. Boy, she just got so tickled. But it confused her a little bit because she knew I was a Christian. But here I danced with the head prostitute there. So we became friends. I started going to the mud bar and just sitting in with all the alcoholics. They had a picture of Jesus on the wall and they had all these soccer player pictures and all these posters everywhere. And I keep pointing to Jesus and I'd say in their language that I loved him and that he loved them. So then I started bringing a kid with me that was about 16 years old, and he would interpret. We kept sharing Christ with all the different neighbors. And then one day, one of the neighbors gave his heart to the Lord. He was a thief, and he was the bad boy of the community.
Tell me how that happened.
He had a different name, but we named him Yeslamso, which means man of peace, after he gave his heart to the Lord. But he was always picking fights with everybody. He had demon possession. He was always such a troublemaker. When we first got there, the Lord showed me that I was to strategically be praying for him and Liquor Mama. And then later on, the witch doctor. And we found out that he was our neighbor 6 months later after we were there. And God just kind of kept his hut hidden. And I didn't know that he was there for that length of time.
How far away from your place was this witch doctor living?
Stone throw.
A stone throw away.
Did not ever see.
And you were blind to that the whole time.
I did not see that hut for 6 months. Like, literally, not even notice it.
400 feet. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, Lamso gave his heart to the Lord. That started changing the area up there. He used to chase his wife around with a machete every day, this commotion of all the neighbors. And so one day his child died, and I went to the funeral, and I sat with all of them. They mourned for 3 days. I noticed that there was this man there. He had this turban on his head, which they don't normally have turbans on their head, and he had an earring in his ear. And he kept looking over at me, and I kept looking at him. But there was hundreds of natives there, but boy, he was just like highlighted to me. So later that day, my good friend came over, and I said, "Testify." I said, "Who is this guy at this funeral?" He goes, "Oh," he goes, "that is the great witch doctor. That is Gopelio." And I said, "You're kidding me. I didn't know we had a witch doctor around here." So later in that day, I was pointing to him. I said, "Now, today I've just noticed this mud hut here." I said, "Who lives in this mud hut?" He goes, "That's where the great witch doctor lives." I go, "I have a great witch doctor as a neighbor." I was so excited. My heart filled up with so much joy and excitement. So I just started praying, and I said, "Okay, God, I know you have me here for this." And I felt like the Lord said, "Yes, I want you to be praying for him." He was the third person that I was to strategically, consistently pray for. When you go into that kind of situation, you think, oh, you're going to go walk around his yard and pray, and you're going to start binding this and binding that, you know, or whatever. But as I prayed, the Lord told me, because I just want you to pray my love to surround his mud hut and to surround him. He says, if you do anything else, you'll be a casualty. I was kind of shocked. I'm like, that's it? So I did that consistently. I could see his mud hut. If I stood on this rock thing in our yard, I could see his mud hut. And I would just pray constantly. Sounds crazy, but I'd yell out over the land saying that this land is the Lord's, and speak out and declare over the land. And just consistently prayed for him. One day I decided that it was time for us to meet face to face. So Testify, the guy that told me about him, said, "Okay, we will get up at the crack of dawn and we will walk to his house and you will meet him and we will see if we can have a coffee ceremony, because that would be the proper thing to do as neighbors." So we got up really early when we were out there, and I was so excited. I kept telling all my guards, "Tomorrow morning, I get to meet the witch doctor." I didn't know, but one of our guards was related to him. So we went out there, and there he was. He was already dressed. He was coming down the mountain, and we met each other, and we arranged for a coffee ceremony to have together. But when we went to it a few days later, he didn't tell his wife we were coming. I think he was a little bit afraid. So we went into his mud hut, and we ended up having coffee just with his wife. It was interesting because Testify used to live at our compound before we had moved there years before. And Testify started praying over that land. And Gopelio came to the gate one day and said, "Testify, come out here." He says, "I want to kill you. Why have you brought Jesus to this area?" So here I'm bringing Testify back, and Testify is with me the whole time to talk to Gopelio. Gopelio, he wasn't there, and we just kept praying. And by now I had, this was like 6 months, 7 months, and I was just having people all over America pray for Gopelio. And so one day I saw Gopelio outside, because he used to try to avoid us. I went out there and I handed the camera to Mark. I go, "Mark, I'm going to run up to this witch doctor. You take a picture and take it fast, because I'm sending this picture back to America." So we took the picture, and Gopilio's face was so stern. He was so unhappy. So then I flipped the camera around to show him his picture. Then he stood really erect and sucked up air and stood straight, and I took another photo of him. So months later, I went to his house, and I gave his wife those photos. We just started establishing relationship with his wife.
And this is sometime after that original coffee ceremony then?
Yes.
So how many meetings are we into this now?
Oh, my goodness.
And how formal was it?
Oh, I would just go there impromptu,
okay.
Just come by. I'd see all the kids playing outside. And it was interesting because I would always have all these kids around me. And as soon as I would get to the witch doctor property, all the kids would just peel off because they wouldn't go past that boundary, that property line, because there's so much demonic stuff there. So I would just go and talk to Gopilio's wife, and she had a big, huge goiter. And I asked her if we could have the Christian doctor take that off, but she was afraid. I gave her something or did something for her. And so she felt like she needed to give me something back one day. She said, "What can I give you back? What can I do for you?" And I thought about it. And so I said, "What you can do for me is anytime I want to come over to your house, you'll let me come in and pray for you."
All along, she's hoping to have coffee or some kind of connection with Gopilio again.
Yes.
But he is, though we didn't know at the time, is in fear.
Yes.
He wants to meet us. We find out afterwards, but he himself is afraid of just meeting us. He doesn't know what it's going to mean. He doesn't know what it's going to look like. Something in the spiritual realm is telling him that it's important, but it's also probably going to be life-changing or even threatening for him.
Yeah.
So he's avoiding us up to this point.
You're listening to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. There's a lot more coming up, so please stay with us.
A survey a while back revealed that the average household in America has 4.4 Bibles in it, with some homes containing 6, 7, 8, or even more copies of God's Word. And that's wonderful. But did you know that there are places in the world where people have never even seen a Bible? That means they are literally starving for the essential life-giving power of the Scriptures. As you may also know, we've done many successful Bible projects over the years at Compassion Radio. This has helped to place over 500,000 of them with believers, pastors, and evangelists. We are so excited to tell you about our Compassion Radio Bibles Project. For the first time ever, Compassion Radio and this campaign are being underwritten so that every single dollar raised for Bibles goes to that project. Think about that. It's the biggest matching gift challenge we've ever offered at Compassion Radio, and there is no limit to this offer. The more you give, the more goes to the field and the front lines of gospel outreach. So please, pray big with us about this, and then act exactly as the Lord shows you. Make this challenge known to your family and friends. Talk to your pastor, your Sunday school class, small group, or home fellowship. Bring it to your benevolence or missions committee. Pray about where the Lord might have you share this unique opportunity. Let's saturate the world with God's Word like never before. If you'd like to help place a Bible or a Gospel of John into the hands of someone who has never seen the Word of God before and wants it in the countries of India, Nepal, and China, please contact us right now. The number is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. You can also give at CompassionRadio.com. That's CompassionRadio.com. You can also text the word Bibles to 53445. That's Bibles to 53445. And you can also mail your tax-deductible donation to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Just be sure to put Bibles Project in the memo on your check. Thank you so very much for anything you can do to help us in our efforts to get the Word of God out to those who need it and want it the most. God bless.
We're always on mission. This is Compassion Radio with Bram Floria.
So then I decided to go and clean up all the trash around the witch doctor's hut because it had so much rubbish everywhere. So I would go and do things like that, or bring the kids balls. Christmas came and I went and gave his family a blanket, which is a big deal for them. He would never be there. One time I thought I saw him, but he ran into the mud hut and I kind of went back in there, but it was so dark I couldn't see him. One day, I just felt this about a year and 3 months after praying and just keep establishing a relationship with them. I just felt like I had tons of curses or stuff on me. I felt down. I could feel it. There was so much warfare going on that whole year. We were perpetually getting sick. There was all kinds of things that happened.
And this whole time, you're still praying the circle of love around his hut?
Oh, yeah. Like consistently, just consistently praying.
Reminds me a bit of Mark Batterson's book about the circle maker, actually marking it out. Just the imagination that it takes to pray something of a physical context around something that God has told you to claim.
Yes. And so one day I went to the hospital because I thought, man, I need prayer. I'm starting to get hit hard. And the missionaries there said, man, you've got some serious curses on you. And they go, we don't know what to do. You need to call somebody in America and have them pray for you. And I was discouraged because I'm like, our Skype doesn't work very well. Yeah. And I walked home and I walked by the mud bar and I would always stop. But this time I just kind of walked back by it. And I was so discouraged. And I'm walking up the hill and I turned and looked over at the witch doctor's hut. And there he was standing in the doorway of his mud hut. I'm like, you got to be kidding. In my day where I want to just...
So your rock bottom is his open
my
door.
My rock bottom, absolutely. And usually I would just push through, but I was so discouraged. I just thought, you know what? I just want to go home and crawl up in a little ball and cry myself to sleep. It was just a weird moment. And I kept walking and I didn't turn to him. And I just kept walking a few yards up the hill. And all of a sudden I hear this, I'm a Lelo'o, which is his greeting. And here he had ran to me. And he's like 70 years old and he had run. And Ethiopians don't run to a white woman, especially a witch doctor. And he had run up to me and he's all out of breath. And he looks at me and he goes, I love you in English. And I'm thinking, how does he even know how to say those words? And he goes, I love you. And I go, you love me? He goes, yes, I love you. So he tells me in his language to come. And I'm like, oh my goodness, Lord, you got to be kidding me. So he takes my hand. We walk over to his mud hut. He sits me inside his mud hut. And now I'm good friends with Demokach, his wife. He tells her to go get this food. And he sits this bowl of cracked wheat in front of me. Mm. And he tells me to eat it. Now, this witch doctor had killed lots of people. Mm. I thought, oh my goodness, he's probably going to try to kill me or something here. And so I just prayed and I just said, God, you protect me in this. You're a greater power than he has. Mm. I have waited for this moment with this man. You just show him who's more powerful. I'm going to eat it. And so his wife got 2 spoons, which they don't even eat with utensils, which was surprising. And he kept telling me ma, which means to eat it. And he sat there watching me. You're sitting in this mud hut with dirt floor. There's chicken poop and dog poop all over the floor. It's foul in there. It's dirty. You've got all these entities that he worships, all his bowls that he worships Satan with in there that do sacrificial type things in there. So I start eating it. And he tells me, he starts talking about the pictures I gave him. By now, I can't understand him because he went past with my little part of understanding. And so I told him, just one moment. I called up Mark and I said, Mark, I am in the witch doctor's hut right now. I said, do you know where our interpreter is? He goes, oh, he's up here with me. He goes, we're a couple hours away. I said, ah. So I hung up the phone and I just said, God, how am I going to do this? And I looked right out the doorway and 7 feet out the doorway was this kid that always would interpret for me. And he's sitting outside playing with a new cell phone that he just got. They were just starting to get cell phones at the time. So I called him in and his name is Emmanuel, God with us. And he came in and I said, I need you to interpret. So we talked and I told Gopito all about Jesus. And I told him about him being the ultimate sacrifice because I knew he understood what sacrifices meant because he had sacrificed so much to Satan. His whole compound had bull horns of all these sacrificed heads and pieces all over the yard there and told him all about Jesus. And he just sat there and listened. And at the end, I said, can I come over and show you a movie about Jesus? He goes, I give you my permission. And so I said, I'll come tomorrow. That bowl that we were eating out of, he started eating out of it as well. And that meant that we were coming into a covenant agreement. Right. I didn't realize it. And so it meant that he was receiving me and receiving what I had to say. And that anytime I came into the home that I was supposed to be received, he had decided this. And so when I got up to leave, I asked him if I could pray for him.
And he said, yeah, so I got on my knees in front of him and he just sat there and he looked at me and you could see the demonic just completely come over his face and his eyes grew angry and his face just grew black. And the Lord said, don't look at him. And so I just went ahead and prayed for him. And I blessed everything I could possibly think of in his life to bless. And I had every word interpreted so he can understand every single thing that I was saying over his life. And when I got up to leave, he stood up and he brushed the dirt off my skirt, which I don't know why, it just endeared my heart to him. And so I left and I came back the next day with Tesfai, the guy that he wanted to kill. And we sat there and watched this Jesus film on the computer in his mud hut. And his kids were all sitting around and the chickens were above our head. And he just sat there and he was the only one sitting in a chair. And he had his chin on his hand and his elbow sitting on the table and 2 feet away from the screen watching this 2-hour Jesus film. And he was watching it so intently. And he kept talking to Tesfai, but he wouldn't take his eyes off the screen. And he was asking him over and over again, what was Jesus doing in this movie? And halfway through, I was expecting that there was going to be some demonic stuff happening. All of a sudden, there was this thing that came in the doorway. And I kind of jumped, to be honest with you. It had a head, like this huge, massive head and this little tiny body. And I kind of jumped. I'm like, oh my goodness, I've never seen a demon with such a big head. But it wasn't the demon. It was his son coming in with the hay for the cow that he had around his head. He was coming in. And he came in right at the crucifixion, the second oldest son, and he came in and sat down and watched the movie with us. And afterwards, Gopilio said, wow, Jesus has suffered so much for me. He totally got it. And I asked him if he wanted to have Jesus, and he said, no, I am not ready yet. But then his son spoke up, and he says, I want Jesus. So Gopilio throws his little arms up in the air and he says, take my son and teach him the ways of God. And so we did. The demonic immediately started attacking his family. His daughter got deathly sick the next day, but then she ended up living. But see, that's part of the whole thing with the witch doctors. They start attacking the family.
Yeah.
You know, when Gopilio started wanting to interact with Mark and I, the demons were killing off his livestock as fast as they could. They were killing all kinds of things off, just trying to distract him from us. About 2 weeks later, we always showed the Jesus film up in front of our house. And his wife said to me that day when I was with her, Gopilio ran up to your house to watch Jesus film, and it was stopped 10 minutes after he got there. And I said, Demokash, does he want to see Jesus film again? She said, yes. So I said, okay, I'll be there tonight. During this time, we had no electricity. Our electrical plant had burned up. Mark was gone. So Tesfai and I went there again that night. We walked in there and Gopil looked at me. I sat next to him. He and I were great friends by now. He turns to me and he says, I want this Jesus. Me and my whole household will accept Jesus. I kind of teased him. I said, you don't want to watch Jesus film first? He goes, no. So soon as he went to accept Christ, it's dark and no electricity. It was so interesting. Soon as he threw his hands up in the air, when they put the right hand up to accept Christ in their culture, if they're involved in satanic activity, then they throw their left hand up. And that means full surrender to accept Christ. Soon as he threw up his hands, this light bulb comes on in his house. There was no power at that time. I mean, it was God. God was alive. But it was neat because you got to see all their faces and accepting Christ. The whole family did.
We'll hear more of this conversation next time on Compassion Radio. If you've missed any part of today's broadcast, you can listen again anytime just by opening up a browser on your computer, smartphone, or tablet and going to CompassionRadio.com. While you're there, go ahead and check out our newsletter to find out more about this ministry. And please think about signing up for our email updates. Again, it's CompassionRadio.com. Now, if this broadcast is a blessing to you, would you please consider three things? First, please pray for us. Your prayers are vital to the effectiveness of this ministry. Second, would you please tell a friend about Compassion Radio? Sharing this broadcast will help us reach as many people as possible with the encouraging reports Bram brings us from the mission field, both here in the U.S. and abroad. And finally, would you please consider supporting this ministry financially? Compassion Radio is 100% listener supported. That means it's your gifts that make it possible for us to continue. Now, there's a couple of ways you can get a hold of us. You can call us right now at 800-868-2478, or you can go to CompassionRadio.com, and when you're there, just click on the donate button. Again, it's 800-868-2478 or CompassionRadio.com. Now, if you'd really like to make your giving super easy, you can just text the word compassion to 53445. That's the word compassion, C-O-M-P-A-S-S-I-O-N, to 53445. And last but certainly not least, if you want to go old school and mail us your tax-deductible donation, great. Just send it to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Thanks a lot. And thanks for taking time out of your busy day to listen. We are so very thankful for you. And please be sure to join us again for more Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. This program is sponsored by Compassion Radio Ministries and your generous financial support.